As I promised last night, I wanted to use this talk on the second morning of Easter Retreat 2008 to talk about the Buddha's teaching on Anapanasati. This is the mindfulness of the breath method. That was the method which the Buddha used under the Bodhi tree to become enlightened. It was certainly, if you read the teachings of the Buddha, the original texts, it is by far the most popular of the meditation methods. And if anybody wonders how does that compare with Satipatthana, you can just read in the Anapanasati Sutta, number 118 of the Majjhima Nikaya, that anyone who fulfills the 16 steps of Anapanasati also at the same time fulfills the 4 Satipatthanas. In other words, the Anapanasati, according to the Buddha, is Satipatthana practice. By doing the Anapanasati, you don't change to something else. The Anapanasati is the Satipatthana, according to the Buddha. If you don't believe me, just go and read Majjhima 118, the Anapanasati Sutta. So it is fundamental to the path of to enlightenment, the path of meditation. And as I've been mentioning earlier on, that it's the way of meditation is stilling the mind, letting go of so many things. And the stages of Anapanasati can be better compared to the signposts on the journey. They're not so much what you do as what you experience on the path. These are just the signposts which happen, the landmarks which occur as you go on the journey into stillness, into peace, into letting go. Which is why that sometimes that some people have never learned Anapanasati or never even heard the name before. And in my life as a monk so far, I've come across several people who have just sat down somewhere and just got very still and very peaceful. And they've gone through these stages automatically without having a clue what they're doing. And when they come out afterwards, and they get quite surprised, they've got into a very powerful, deep state of mind, and they want to find out what it was, and that's when they come and ask monks like myself, and you ask what you experience, and then you can see they've been on that same journey, that same path. And all those stages, these are just what they've been experiencing as landmarks. Instead of aiming for them, it's just something what happens when you let go. So when you let go, this is just what occurs. It's not something you attach to, something you aspire to, something you try and grab onto. It's just the nature of a mind which starts to let go of things. However, it is helpful to know these stages. And even though I mentioned you should not really aspire towards them, once I mention them, you will aspire towards them. It's just the fact when you have stages, the nature of the human mind is always want to go on to the next stage. When I tell you there's something more than what you've experienced already, craving will come up and say, yeah, I want that as well. And especially if you hear that someone else has got that. So if they can do it, I can do it. And we get this terrible idea in our mind, or like craving, aspiration, which is going to disturb the mind. But I don't mind that problem for the time being, because it's going to tell you what these stages are. And afterwards, I'm going to hopefully have the time to tell you how you attain those stages. You attain those stages by giving up all this aspiration business. The less you do, the quicker you go along the journey. A couple of years ago, I used as a theme for the rains retreat in Serpentine Monastery, Bodhinyana Monastery, I used the theme of a saying by Buddhaghosa in the Visuddhimagga. And it was one of his favorite, I don't think it was he composed it, I think he got it from another monk, because I know that Buddhaghosa, who wrote Visuddhimagga and many commentaries, he obviously was not a meditator, but he got this from probably a very wise, powerful, accomplished meditator of that time. And there was a little poem which went, "The path is, but no traveler on it is seen. Enlightenment is, but not the person who enters it." No, it sounds like it's something from a Zen koan, but it's actually from Theravada, from one of the most important books in the Theravada commentary tradition, the Visuddhimagga. "The path is, but no traveller on it is seen." And that was the one which I was focusing on for 3 months of retreat. The path is the Eightfold Path of Nibbana, but no traveller on it is seen. The more there's a traveller there, the more the path disappears. And you know what I mean here? What the traveller is, the doer, the controller, that's you. You are the traveller. The more you disappear, the more the traveller vanishes, the more the path becomes very clear. And when you completely disappear, the path to enlightenment is like a huge 6-lane highway going in one direction which you can't get off even if you want to. So this is a wonderful simile which describes what we're doing here. The more you're a traveller, the more you look at these stages and want to travel along them, the more of a barrier you're going to be putting in front of yourself to any sort of achievement. But the more you let go, the more you disappear, the more there's not this person inside of you, controlling, wanting, doing, complaining, judging, the more that thing inside of you disappears, the smoother, the easier, the faster the path becomes. So to gain these stages, we need to really learn how to let go. And every stage of these 16 stages, they're not just sequential. It's not you go from one to the other to the next, like, you know, from grade 1 at school to grade 2 to grade 3 to grade 4. It's not something you sort of progress stage by stage. It's not a progress, it's an ingress. In other words, the second stage is inside the first stage. The third stage is inside the second stage. The fourth stage is inside the third stage. You can imagine it just like concentric rings. And the inner ring is inside the outer ring. Or the Chinese dolls. No, the Russian dolls, sorry. The Russian dolls, which people, they go to sort of Moscow or somewhere in Russia, and they buy these very traditional Russian dolls, beautifully painted, and you open it up and there's another figure exactly the same, only slightly smaller inside. And you open that up and there's another figure inside. Wasn't it Chris, I think you gave me a couple of those as a visual aid a few years ago, so people could actually see what we're talking about. The next stage is right inside this stage you're in now. Now this is the important thing to know about Anapanasati and all these stages. You don't abandon the stage you're in now and go off to the next stage. You stay where you are, in this stage right now, you just go deeper into it. And deeper inside this stage, you find the following stage. Now this is very important to know this, because many people make the mistake. Say they're in Anapanasati, they're watching the breath. How do I get on to the next stage? Am I supposed to not be aware of the breath and say be aware of a nimitta, or what should I do? And again, you don't do anything. You stay where you are, so you're watching the breath. If a nimitta is going to come, it's going to come up from right within the centre of that beautiful breath. It doesn't come from the left or the right, from within the centre. Because as if within the breath, there you can have your nimitta. Within the nimitta, there you have the jhanas. You don't go on to the next stage. You go deeper in where you are now to find the next level. The next level is within the stage you're in now. I mention that because you waste so many years of meditation if you don't understand that. So what the Anapanasati is, the 16 stages with two preliminaries. First preliminary is to find a quiet spot. And if you look at that, what the Buddha said, it's a quiet spot. You don't try and start meditation in the marketplace, in a busy situation, because if you're an adept, you can sort of cut out all that sensory disturbance. But most people just can't do that. You need to find a quiet place. So you find a nice temple or a retreat center or a monastery. If there's nothing else you have, just find the quietest corner of your house. But you need quietness. And the second thing you need is comfort as well. Which is why, you know, even the Buddha, when he sat under the Bodhi tree, I always wondered that when it said he sat at the root of a Bodhi tree. And have you seen Bodhi trees? Their roots are so knobbly, I can't imagine anyone sitting on those roots. But he also said he got some straw first of all. So he made a nice cushion to sit on, just like you've got nice cushions. Because otherwise those knobbly roots of a Bodhi tree would be poking into his backside, he would never got enlightened, he just got a sore bottom. So he made a nice comfortable seat. So you have to have a comfort, physical comfort. He was under the shade of a tree. And for those of you who've gone to Bodh Gaya, or gone to, no, to the, this is where the Buddha became enlightened in India, or gone to some of the monasteries, you know, like the Jetavana monasteries, these were all very comfortable places. By a river, nice wind, nice and level. He wasn't actually going to mosquito-infested, tiger-infested, snake-infested jungles. These were actually places which were quite comfortable, quite civilized, where he went to actually to go and meditate, where he became enlightened. So next time you go to Bodh Gaya, it's not that far from the river, imagine what it would have been like in the Buddha's time. A nice, beautiful grove, like a park, like King's Park over here in Perth, only without any people. It's comfortable, still, what the Buddha said, suitable for seclusion. And then you sit down. And it does say to sit with the body erect, but for many years, I also thought that meant keeping a straight back. I don't know how many monks have got sore backs. And it was only, I think, last year or 2 years ago, someone sent me a article from, I think, Science or Scientific American, and they found that the most comfortable position for the back, the healthiest position for it, is about, I think, 20 degrees back, or 30 degrees, or 20 degrees back from the horizontal, from the vertical, leading back. You know, I always thought that, because I always felt the most comfortable for me. So sitting up straight, perfectly straight, many of you find if you do that too much, you'll get sore backs. Be careful there. Sometimes if you're mindful and trust your wisdom, you know that sometimes leaning back slightly is by far the most comfortable position. So you've got wise people like Tom over there, he's got himself a nice chair, which actually can lean backwards, so he won't have backache. Or even better, the people who came here early bagged the wall seats, which is, you know, the first class seating in any meditation retreat. Next to the wall, you can lean up. But whatever, you do whatever you can. These zafus, the cushions are great, the stools are great. You've got to find yourself a comfortable position. Don't try and be clever and just sort of sit in full lotus in extreme agony thinking you're going to get somewhere that way. I know that in some people say no pain, no gain. But in meditation, no joy, no gain. No joy, no samadhi. So be careful there. And if you wonder about the right posture, whether you should put your left leg over your right leg or your right leg over your left leg, where you push, you put your hands on your knees, on your palms, or wherever you want to put them, it doesn't matter any at all. The posture is not important as long as it is comfortable. And however that comfort is for you, try not to lay down in the hall, because if you lay down, you'll start snoring and you'll disturb other people. If you want to go to bed in your room. But just sitting down, reasonably comfortable. We've got the chairs in the back there. Even the Buddha sat on a chair. So if you want to sit on a chair meditating or listening to a talk, well done, great. Because many of you were brought up sitting on chairs, you're not really learned to sit on the floor, sitting on the chairs is a good idea for you. And don't think it's second-class meditation. It's not. Sitting on a chair, you can get deep meditation as well as you can sitting on the floor. It's just putting your body into a comfortable position so you can let go of it, so it's not a hassle or a burden for you anymore. And if anything, if you really are concerned about your posture, there's only one part of the posture which I think is really, really helpful. And that is what your mouth is doing. If you really want to develop a good meditation posture, smile when you're meditating. Now that's no joke. You will find during your meditation, if nothing's happening, and you're getting a bit sort of dull or bored or whatever, now just make your mouth smile. Just turn up the corners of the lip. And as soon as you smile, psychologically, that turns the mind into looking for happiness. It brings a bit of joy and energy into your mind. And I have used that in my own meditation. Sometimes that, you know, it's been a little bit of a blockage, it hasn't been progressing, or ingressing rather. And I just pause with whatever I'm doing, maybe watching the breath, and I just watch my mouth, make it smile, and I go back to my breath is brightened up, is happier. This is just basic psychology. If you are grimacing, then your mind will be looking for negativity, and will be fighting it very easily. So if you get into a negative state of mind, just, you know, use a bit of body awareness around your mouth and smile, for goodness sake. And if you can't manage a smile, two fingers and push up, make yourself smile. It's one of the reasons why I try to crack jokes or do sort of extreme things over here, like the three extreme sadhus, to bring a bit more happiness into a meditation retreat. I'm not doing that just to entertain you, because I know that that bit of energy you enjoy will enhance your meditation. So, you've got the preliminaries done. And now, in Anapanasati, they say you arouse mindfulness as a priority. For those of you who have heard that old translation done almost 100 years ago now, by Rice David, to actually to establish mindfulness in front of you, think about it. What does it mean in front of your nose here? In front means giving it priority. Putting it in front means putting it not physically in front, but putting it in front of all the other things you want to achieve and do. Now the word priority in English has that same meaning. Priority means putting it in front, making it prior, first, off the rank. So you make mindfulness the main priority to begin with. Forget about watching the breath, forget about getting nimittas, forget about everything, just make sure you're mindful first of all. You're aware. Now what does that mean? What is mindfulness? Basic mindfulness means being in the present moment and shutting up, being aware. Because if you've got thinking going on in your mind, you're not watching anything other than the thoughts. And the thoughts are second-hand knowledge. It's not the reality. It's what you think about reality. And all thoughts miss the point. They're approximations at best. And most of the time you add so much what isn't there, and sometimes, not sometimes, I think all the time, you know, you should recognize that these thoughts are untrustworthy. I know in Australia culture they have this group of people called the Dodgy Brothers, who are supposed to be second-hand car salesmen, who you could not trust. And so, you know, the thoughts of the Dodgy Brothers, you can't trust them. They're trying to sell you an old bomb as if it was like a new car. This is what thought does to you. So I don't trust my thought, unless it's just coming after a deep meditation, like a jhana, then I can trust it. Otherwise, it's distorted. It's what the Buddha called delusion. Ignorance, avijja. So we can't trust that thought. So, if we're watching the thought, we're not watching anything else, we're not really mindful. True mindfulness is silence and present moment awareness. And for those of you who haven't heard this exercise before, it's very simple to be silent. It's so easy to have no thoughts in your mind. Because you were just doing it in the spaces between my words. You were silent. That's mindfulness. It's awareness. Not of thinking, but waiting to receive the information. Without second judging it, without thinking about it. Not rushing off into the future, because you're missing the present. Not lingering in the past, because again, you're missing what's happening. Right here. Aware. Awake. Open to the moment. So if you want a good definition of mindfulness, there you have it. Open to this moment. Now, you have to understand what mindfulness is. At least you understand it. You may not be able to attain it all the time, but at least make that an important part of the beginning of meditation. Settle yourself in the present moment. No past, no future. Stop all this thinking business. if you like, put the mind just before thinking begins. So you're just one step ahead of thinking. Not really ahead, but not before it starts. Because you understand what thinking is. And once thinking starts, then you're off. But you just stay back just before it actually leaves the station of your mind. And if you just wait at that point before the thinking begins, you have this beautiful stillness of the mind, the silence of the mind. And from that point, you have that degree of mindfulness. You find the rest of the meditation can go incredibly smoothly. However, many people, they rush a little bit, and you can't really stop them. So if you can't maintain that stillness for long, then at least you can start watching your breath. It gives you something to do. At least you're not thinking about girls, boys, crickets, soccer, politics, travel, family, or whatever else you start thinking about during these retreats. At least you're thinking about the breath instead of all this other stuff. So if you can't establish really full mindfulness very quickly, establish enough. Enough, what do we mean by enough? Enough so that you can actually watch the breath for more than like two or three breaths in a row. And sometimes people say, yeah, watch the breath, breathing in, breathing out, breathing, and then they're gone somewhere else. And maybe 5 minutes later, they realize they haven't been watching the breath, it's gone. One of the reasons is because, again, they haven't done the preparation. Preparation is so important. And we're building this retreat center opposite my monastery, and it's taken a lot of money and a lot of effort just to prepare the ground before you start building. Now, with all of the pipes underground, all of the compaction, all of the drainage, that takes a lot of work just to do the preparation. In fact, even the whole retreat centre, I think we started about 3 years ago. It's got up to this point of preparing permits and preparing sort of plans and everything else. So actually to get this far, the preparation is the most important in any task. If you prepare it well, what goes next goes trouble-free. So prepare yourself in present moment awareness and silence. Now that's something you can do throughout the day. When you're eating, be in this moment. You know what the meditation on eating is? One spoon at a time. Or fork, if you eat with a fork. Which means you put the food on the spoon, say, or the fork, and you put it in your mouth. And not until it's swallowed do you put some more things on your spoon. What happens with most people? They've got lots of food in the mouth, and they've got one thing waiting on the spoon. They've got another heap on the plate, and they're deciding what's going to come next. They're usually three or four spoon or forkfuls ahead of themselves. Now that's not being in the present moment, is it? You're not actually tasting the food, you're thinking about what you're going to eat next. Now these are simple exercises. You find you can train yourself here on this retreat, when you're eating, one morsel at a time, and only when it's swallowed do you think what you're going to eat next. So one spoon, your spoon should be empty, or fork should be empty most of the time. You should be concentrating on just eating, not what you're going to do next. You're putting yourself in the present moment, being a little bit silent. You're not thinking either during the eating. You're putting all your attention on tasting the food. When you go in the toilet, you don't start thinking or reading books. You just wait there in the toilet making sure everything goes naturally and easily so you don't get any hemorrhoids or anything else because of you strain too much. Just take your time. And whatever else you do, just walking, brushing your teeth, you know, be there in a moment. Stop thinking about what you're going to do next. It's great you don't have anything to do next here. You've got no appointments which you have to rush for. Even if you're late for the interviews, I don't mind as long as, you know, it's just because you're going slowly. So that way, your present moment awareness and silence throughout the day. It also means that when you come to meditation, you're way ahead of the game, even before you sit down. You sit down, quiet seat, mindfulness the priority, make sure you center yourself in this present moment, right here, and just calm the mind from thinking. It's not the time to think now. It's not the time to work out all the problems of your life. Nor is it the time to decide upon the the ultimate meaning of dependent origination, or the reality of God, and all these other big questions. Shut up! And you want to get quiet first of all before you can understand all the answers to those questions. So shh, be quiet. When you do have some present moment awareness and silence, please respect it. The same way we respect the silence in this place by not interfering with other people's quietness, by opening our mouth, by trying to be quiet when we're eating, when we're getting up, turning on the taps or whatever. We're trying to maintain the silence as much as we can because we respect the silence. When you respect silence, you begin to value it. When you value silence, then it remains, it stays. Why is it when you are silent inside for a few minutes, why doesn't it last? You don't respect it, that's why. It's not important for you. The thinking becomes more important for you. You have the idea that through thinking you can solve all the problems and work out all of the solutions to the difficulties of your life. Has that really ever worked? Making solutions through thinking. If it had, you wouldn't be here. So value the silence more than any thinking. When you value it, when you respect it, when you worship it, then it will stay. It only goes because you take it for granted, you don't value it, it's not important. If it really was important, sometimes I've given a simile. Suppose that somebody came in here from the Lotteries Commission of Western Australia and said, in your absence you won the lottery and here's $1 million in cash. And they gave you $1 million in cash. Would you ever just leave it by your seat while you go off to the toilet? Would you ever just leave it at the table when you're having lunch? You'd be watching it all the time. You'd be locking your room. In fact, you probably wouldn't want to leave your room and stay and meditate in there. Because you value that. Anything you value, you don't drop, you don't lose. So if we really value the silence as if it was $1 million, it will stay. Once we got present moment awareness started, I should get on to the Anapanasati, otherwise I'll be really late. We become aware of the breathing. How do you become aware of the breath? You've all been meditating before. For new meditators, it's great because I just tell them, okay, breathe in and out 3 times. Close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times, and then open your eyes again after the 3rd breath. Now these are people who have never meditated before, they haven't got a clue what meditation is. Everybody can do that. And then I ask, how did you know you were breathing in and out? I never tell them where to watch. I just say, breathe in and out 3 times, and after the 3rd breath, open your eyes. And they all watch their breath in their own way. They all have enough awareness of their physical sensations to know the breath has gone in and finished, now the breath has gone out, finished, another in, another out, another in, another out, then they open their eyes. Whatever it was that told them they were breathing in and then they were breathing out, that's all they need to do. That is what they watch, whatever feeling it is which tells them what the breath is doing. It doesn't have to be at the tip of nose, it doesn't have to be at the tummy, it doesn't have to be anywhere, it can move, it doesn't matter. The important thing is you're watching your breath, and you're aware it's going in or it's going out. In the same way, when you walk in meditation, you know the left foot is moving, you know the right foot is moving. How do you know that? There's many, many sensations tell you that. You don't need to analyze it. Just to know the breath is moving in, the breath is moving out. And the first 2 stages of Anapanasati, just to give you something more to hold on to, a crutch. So when you're watching the breath, you don't move away from it so much. You just know it's a long breath or a short breath. Or it's a middle breath, or it's a long, or it's a medium, short. Or whatever else it is, it doesn't really matter, just make it interesting. Because when it's interesting, you've got something more than just watching the breath. It gives you that extra handle so the mind can grab onto the breath so it doesn't get lost. Breathing in or breathing out, short or long. Some techniques you can actually deliberately mess around with the breath. You know, breathe in longer than usual. Because, you know, when you actually breathe in unnaturally, it's very easy to watch, because it's a little bit uncomfortable. Breathe in shorter than natural, just because that makes it, again, easier to watch. Because, you know, it's more prominent sensations. And you can flip it around. Those of you who've been on my retreats before, you know that I've taught the backwards breath meditation. And the backwards breath meditation, most of you know, is when you're watching the breath, you breathe out first and then you breathe in. Now that might sound to be exactly the same, but if you try it, it's actually different. When you start your breathing by breathing out first and then breathing in, it's a little bit different. And that's enough to make it interesting. All we're doing over here is making the breath interesting at the beginning so you can focus on it. However, the best technique to be able to focus on the breath, which I mentioned 2 days already, being kind to it, being gentle. Because if you're kind to this breath, if you imbue it with some loving kindness, it becomes very delightful. Being a monk, people come to their monastery with their babies. Do they do that to you, sisters? They bring their babies to you?
They do.
They do, yeah. I became a monk to get rid of babies. They come and give the babies. And part of the tradition is actually they offer the baby to me. It's like, you know, Dharma, like they offer food or they offer requisites, now they offer a baby. And the idea is, by offering the baby to me, it's, you know, I'm like their god, no, not their god, like their Buddha father. So, you know, I've got some responsibility for them. So I give it a quick blessing, usually as quick as I can, and then I give it back as fast as I can. I'm not used to babies. But, you know, you see a baby come to the monastery, and all the girls there, and all the old women as well, they can't wait to hold the baby. And you can see them smiling so stupidly at this monster. And they love babies. And that's why they don't want to give them up. And that's why when the mother comes, can I have my baby back? Well, I suppose so. And you can see the baby react differently than when I'm holding it than when these girls are holding it. Because when you're kind to the baby, it usually cries when it's in my lap. Because when you give it kindness, you get kindness back. Now imagine that your breath is like your baby. Ah, there it is, breathing in, breathing out. Ah, it's just so really cute, my little breath. It's just got a lovely little smile. Whatever it is. If you give loving kindness onto your breath, and make even a little commentary about the breath, it's not thinking about, you know, the work or the family, at least it's focusing on the breath, so focus thinking is okay at this time. And it's just with the breath, it's just beautiful, nice little baby breath, isn't it nice? And then it makes it easier to watch. It's fun to watch. What many people do when they do breath meditation, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Gee, this is boring. No wonder they can't stay with the breath. So make it interesting. If you want to, you can do some counting with the breath. Although, sometimes that's a bit too much unless you're an accountant. Breathing in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and backwards, 9, 8, 7, 6. You can do, make your own counting method if you like. Sometimes that makes it a little bit interesting. But you just want to try and make it interesting till you get the breath in mind. But when you put the loving kindness onto the breath, I've always found that to be the very, very, very best. Because then you like watching the breath. And then the breath stays with you. And this is what we're supposed to be able to do. To be able to, in the third stage of Anapana, to be able to watch the whole of the breath. From the beginning to the end of each in-breath. That's called Sabbakaya Patisamvedi. Experiencing the whole body of the breath. I know that some monks, and they should know better, but they're so stubborn, say that no, this means watching the body. It does not mean watching the body. It's very clear in the Pali. And it's very clear for any meditator. You have to let go of the body as soon as possible. Here you're just watching the whole of the breath. The beginning of the in-breath. See right in the middle, the end of the in-breath, you see the pauses between the breaths. An in-breath is finished, the out-breath is yet to begin.
is a space there. And then the out-breath begins. And the feelings in one out-breath are not the same all the way around. It's a very subtle feeling, first of all, and it builds up to its maximum, and then it drops pretty quickly. And if you can notice all the feelings of one in-breath and one out-breath, when you're interested and you value it, when you start to do this, your whole mind becomes focused on this breath. Something else happens at the same time. Because you're focused, you're simple, you're not thinking, moving backwards and forwards, a natural happiness starts to develop. And this is that old happiness which is born of stillness. The more simple you are, the more focused, the more still you are, after a while that generates its own source of happiness. You have to fake it first of all with, you know, thinking of it as nice little baby, or, you know, just trying to see some value in it, you know, putting some loving kindness and care into it. That's almost like a fake, because it's coming from outside. But after a while, when you get still enough, the breath naturally appears very beautiful. That's its nature, and it's born of stillness. So the third stage is seeing the whole body of the breath, and the next stage is just calming everything down. In other words, calming the will, calming everything. You're relaxing the breath. So instead of saying calming, I prefer relaxing these days, because we all know how to relax. To calm, sometimes we don't know how to do that. We usually intend to calm the breath down, but it gets even more agitated. So the fourth stage, you relax the breath. And I found that a much better word, because we all know how to relax. Now, when we relax, what we do, we take off all the tension, all the tightness. We loosen all the controls. And that's called relaxation. So we're now releasing all the controls of the breath. We're relaxing the breath. And you should be mindful enough now, naturally. I'm not saying a should as a command, but it's just the nature of the mindfulness at this stage. It's enough to notice the breath change slightly. When you relax, it actually feels more easy. You get a feedback mechanism. You intend to relax, and the breath gets more easy. Yeah, you know you're going in the right direction. Another effort of relaxation, and the breath gets even more soft and easy. You're going in the right direction. So you, by mindfulness, you learn how to relax the breath. In the same way that you've learned over the years how to relax your body. You know the body when it's tight and tense. You know when it's relaxed. So you can very easy for you to use those feelings in the body to deliberately relax yourself. In the same way you learn how to relax your breath. That's the fourth stage of anapanasati. Just relaxing the breath. Not tight, relaxed, loose, no control, completely natural and at ease. When you're tense, the breath is tense. When the body is relaxed, the mind is relaxed, the breath is smooth and easy. It's nature. The next stage, the fifth and sixth stage of anapana, I ran ahead of myself a little bit there. Because those fifth and sixth stage, I always say these are the most important. And they're the most neglected by meditation teachers. Developing happiness and joy with the breath. This is crucial to meditation. When you relax, what's it like when you relax your body? Do you feel happy or do you feel suffering? There's a sense of ease and comfort and, oh, this is so nice. You can imagine you're at some resort, say like in Bali, or in Langkawi Island, or wherever else, or the Maldives. You can imagine, close your eyes and imagine this afternoon, you're relaxing on the beach, not a care in the world, just having gone for a nice massage or a spa. And you just had this beautiful 5-star lunch. Oh, isn't this just wonderful, isn't this nice? You can imagine that sort of happiness and joy, but not a care in the world, completely relaxed and at ease. Now that's the sort of happiness which we're going for. Not the happiness cause of excitement. No, just won the lotto! My soccer team has just won the FA Cup! I just fallen in love! Or whatever, all these other sort of stupid sort of happinesses of the world. But this is that deeper, peaceful happiness. you know, just when everything is perfect and content, not a worry in the world. Oh, this is just so nice. And that's the sort of happiness and joy which comes after the meditation, just watching a breath. You've got nothing to do, nowhere to go, just happily just watching a breath go in and go out, sitting there, no pain in the body, no disturbance, completely focused in your breath, happy and joyful. Now that's an important, crucial stage, because once that starts to arise, I called it the beautiful breath many years ago. The delightful breath. The happy breath. Just sitting there and just having a good time. And that's the stage when people start meditating and they don't care about the time. They don't care about breakfast or lunch. They're sitting there. No, rather meditate than have their breakfast. And when people do that, great, I realize your meditation is beginning to take off. So it's a real joy and a pleasure, a happiness, a contentment. You know, this sort of, you hear the gong, go. No, I'd rather meditate. I mean, that, if you're going to sort of not eat until the following day, imagine, you know, that must be something really quite delightful. And that will happen to many of you. You're sitting here and having a wonderful time, you just don't want to come out. Now that's that fourth and fifth stage of happiness and joy with the breath. And when you get to that stage, it is a pivot point in your meditation. Because once you get to that stage, you don't need any effort whatsoever. The happiness and joy keeps you mindful, still on the breath. You just don't want to go anywhere else. So you don't go anywhere else. And because you don't go anywhere else, the happiness and joy start to increase. This is the happiness and joy which is born of stillness. Because you were still enough, you get this happiness and joy. Because of the happiness and joy, you don't have to move, so you keep even more still. More stillness means more joy. More joy means more stillness. More stillness means more joy. You get this supporting combination of stillness and joy, which takes the mind into very, very deep stages of meditation. The fifth and sixth stage of Anapana is actually experiencing the Piti and Sukha, the beautiful, delightful breath. The seventh stage is just getting more stillness, calming it. So you get more happiness and joy. Experiencing the fullness is the eighth stage. The fullness of the happiness and joy. It's the joy which actually supplants the breath. It's not as if you go on to the next stage. These are things which happen from within the breath. The happiness and joy comes within the breath. And the happiness and joy, as it were, pushes out to the edge extremities of your experience. The experience of breathing in and breathing out. The happiness and joy dominate. And so you don't know whether you're watching an in-breath or out-breath anymore. Just this delightful moment called the breath. And from within that, the ninth stage of Anapana happens. Experiencing what its Buddha said, the jitta, the mind. What that means is you see this beautiful light arise in your mind. Coming from right within the beauty, the delight, which came from the breath. That nimitta is a reflection of the mind. It's as if that you're looking at your mind in a mirror. It's this beautiful light. That is that stage of meditation where you see a beautiful light. Some people have a light which is all diffuse all over the place. That's sort of okay, as long as it's full of happiness and joy. If it's sort of a dull, just a light there, but it's not really grabbing you, then leave it alone, go back to a breath. However, the nimittas, which are very useful, even if you get like a whole screen of a beautiful light, that's not so bad, but focus on that part of the screen which is the brightest, the most beautiful. So try and get a simple nimitta instead of a diverse nimitta. If the nimitta is actually spread over the whole screen, I call that, you haven't got enough unity of mind, you've been too diverse, too spread all over the place, you need to focus a little bit more. But if we just focus on the most beautiful part of that screen, a beautiful nimitta does arise. But the best ones is a beautiful like a disc comes up in your mind. Simple. Not like a vision of trees and gardens or whatever. Just a simple, bright, beautiful nimitta. It doesn't matter what color those nimittas are. The most important thing is their stability and their beauty. And what we've got now, the 10th and 11th stages of Anapanasati, is how we deal with that nimitta. Either sampasadanam, which is actually brightening up the nimitta, bringing up more joy and more beauty, and samadhang, chittang, which is stabilizing the nimitta, keeping it still. And those are the two jobs, if you like, which need to be done with the nimitta. Once you have one there, if it's not bright enough, not joyful enough, not powerful enough, it can't take you the rest of the journey. It hasn't got enough gas. So there's tricks on how to brighten up that nimitta. I've already mentioned the major trick is look inside that nimitta, the brightest part. Don't look for the negative, the dull part. Look at the brightest part. Don't look on the edges, look somewhere in the center. And in that nimitta you have the brightest part. The mind will focus into that and look for the brightest part of the brightest part. And it will just keep brightening up and become more and more powerful. Don't be afraid. Many people get afraid when they have nimittas. These are what's called the upakalesas, the refined defilements of meditation which stop you getting into the jhanas. No need to be afraid. The Buddha was afraid. He said, why should I be afraid of this pleasure which has nothing to do with the world? I will not be afraid because it leads to enlightenment. And he got enlightened that way. And afterwards he said, don't be afraid of those powerful mind states. You don't go crazy, you don't go mad, you get enlightened instead. So get into it, just let go and stop trying to protect this fallacious sense of ego. You can't control these things because they're all born of letting go. The more you try and control them, the more they'll start to agitate. In other words, they'll move around. So just stop doing things. The only reason the nimitta isn't still when it moves around is because you are disturbing it. You are doing something. Understanding that nimitta is a reflection of the one who's watching, that nimitta only moves if the one who's watching keeps on moving. So all you need to do is just be still. More still. If you're still, the nimitta is still. It's a reflection. It's an image of you. Once you understand that, you understand the huge importance of stillness, not doing, letting go of controlling, allowing the doer to subside. And then that nimitta is absolutely still. Then the last 12th stage of Anapanasati, Vimochiyan Chittan. We mentioned last night the vimokas, the freedoms of the mind. This is freeing that mind into the jhana. 12th stage of anapana is the experience of jhana. The 9th, 10th and 11th are the working with the nimittas. The 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th are dealing with the delight, the happiness which comes up in the mind. And the 1, 2, 3 and 4 is just getting hold of the breath and calming it down so these happinesses and joys can develop. And they all come from within each other. You get into these jhanas, and afterwards, when you come out afterwards, that's when you can really understand what it means by the reflections on impermanence, fading away, cessation, and giving up, patinissaka. Because you have some data there to work on. And I give talks later on about the insight which happens as a result of the deep meditations, which you can hardly miss, and which do not happen without those deep meditations. You haven't seen enough. You haven't got enough information to work out what's really going on in life. But I'll talk about that in another talk. I've just gone very quickly and very deeply through the stages of meditation. And over the last stages I've gone through deliberately quickly, simply because you don't have to do anything. Once you've got to the stage of the beautiful breath, mindfulness is strong enough that the breath is there and you're happy. It's only a matter of time. The happiness will create the concentration, the stillness. You can just butt out completely. The quicker you butt out, the quicker you let go, the quicker you just disappear, the more you'll understand the path is but no traveller on it is seen. The path gets very, very fast, very quick, very easy, and very enjoyable, because you, the traveller, can now let go. You've done enough. You've got the delightful breath, and it will just take off. Like a snowboard effect, rolling downhill. It rolls downhill according to the natural laws, gets bigger and brighter. And that's the Anapana Sati, according to the teaching of the Buddha. Okay, I know we've got a few minutes for questions on what I've just been talking about, on the meditation on the breath. Yes, John. Okay, I think the confusion is only between the means and the goal. So the goal is very clear. We want to sort of lessen the thinking. How we lessen the thinking is sometimes where the confusion comes. When I say to us, let go of all the thoughts, it's like, how do we let go of the thoughts? And by saying, stop thinking, that's another thought. Come on, I shouldn't be thinking. There I go again. So it sometimes gets so frustrating for people. I know it's an old joke, but it's a very meaningful joke about, you know, the four meditators on a vow of silence. When one sneezed and the first one said, bless you, the second one said, you've broken your vow of silence, the third one said, haha, so have you, the fourth one said, I'm glad I'm the only one here who can keep my vows. And the thing is, as soon as you say something, you're starting thinking. So you can't stop thinking with more thinking. And this is one of the problems. Now when I say just let go of thinking, people think about letting go rather than actually doing the letting go, or rather letting go of the doing. So it's actually the focusing on the means to achieve that silence of the mind. And that means is just letting go. Don't do anything. The mind wants to run off, off it goes. Strange. If you do that, just the mind wants to go and let it go, it doesn't want to go anymore. It stops. Because what you notice, when you experiment with this, all of you, and you'll find actually that it's why the mind thinks is what you've got to really understand. And why the mind is thinking is because a lot of times we may be afraid of present moment, afraid of silence, we're not used to it, we're all this big control freak, we have the idea that the only way to be silent is to make it silent. Rather than just stop making anything and it becomes silent by itself. Which is why one of those similes of the enlightenment of the Buddha, put his bowl in the river Nirantala before his enlightenment, if my bowl flows upstream against the current, may that be a sign that I'll become enlightened. And it did. But I take that much more as an omen, almost like an indication of how to become enlightened. Go against the stream of your so-called intuition based on the world. Everything you've done so far, you've made it happen. Now try not making anything happen. Allow it to happen. That's a tough one to ask people to do. That's why I have to talk about it a lot. That's why it is set up the guards. Yeah, set up the guards there at the beginning to make sure you don't to the past or the future. But you know what guards are like. They always, you know, go off for lunch, or they go watch the soccer on the TV, and they're not really paying too much attention all the time. They're sure guards as well. You know, the guards are only sort of a makeshift. But the best thing is actually to really appreciate the present moment. Instead of using the negative forces of control, use the positive forces of kindness. So the guards are a bit of a makeshift. They don't really work all that long. Does that sort of answer the question?
And just that one about you said it doesn't say about the mind goes come. I've done my mind goes off, and it comes back for short period, it will go off again. So
okay. Okay. It means you're not really letting it go. It means that when it goes, you're going off with it. and you're sort of, you know, enjoying the tour. So when it really means letting go, it's bye-bye mind, I'm just staying here. None of my business. Not my concern. Off you go, you do whatever you want. I'm going to stay here. That sort of letting go. That's why that some of those little mantras, whatever's happening, you're watching the breath, none of my business. Watching these thoughts, none of my business. If it's none of your business, you don't get involved in it. Because you don't get involved or buy into it, it peters out. The only reason a train of thought continues is because you find it interesting and valuable. And you just want to see where it leads to. And if you just completely let it go, I don't care where it leads to, you can go off. Nothing to do with me. I'm not even going to follow you. Then it stops. But investigate and try. Find out what that type of letting go is. Where you let things go and everything becomes still. So this is where we have to play around and investigate until we find out what that word really means, letting go. And the real letting go, everything becomes absolutely still. Many times people have got into these amazing deep meditations. And in the early years I always used to ask them, what special thing did you do this time that you got into this jhana? And they always, I don't ask these days, they always gave exactly the same answer. For the first time I really let go. That's what they said many times. For the first time they really let go. And they realized beforehand they weren't letting go, they were thinking they were letting go, they were playing letting go. But they weren't 100% letting go. And they said, I really 100% let go. And all these amazing things happened. At any time you get a deep meditation, ask yourself, what special thing did I do this time that this amazing experience happened? And that would be, I can almost, if I had any money, I'd bet the whole retreat center that that's what you'd say. That this is really letting go. And now you understand what letting go is. You have to let go of the right thing, not letting go of what's out there. Letting go of this thing inside, which is always controlling and doing and worrying and planning, and that doer, that traveller, that's what we let go of. Thank you for that. Great question. I really appreciate people ask questions like that, because everyone is interested in these answers and questions. Yes, Chris. Okay, you're saying some of the deep meditations, you know, one can't really progress further because one is still fiddling, you know, with the whole process, and how can you overcome that problem? It's the difficult problem, because if at that time you're fiddling and you try and unfiddle with the fiddling, then you're fiddling again. You're fiddling with the fiddling. And that's why it's just so difficult. The number one solution to that is actually to tell yourself at the beginning of the meditation what to do at that stage. It's called programming the mindfulness. You say, when I get to that stage, this, you do this before, when you're starting meditation, when I get to that stage of the meditation, I will completely let go. If it works or doesn't work, doesn't matter. I've done enough, I'm just going to completely be like Ajahn Chah by the still forest pool, just watching the animals come out. And not taking notes, photographs, not saying wow, or not getting upset. I'm going to be completely 100% passive. And if you program your mind at that time, now this is before you even get start meditating, and when you get to that stage, that subconscious conditioning will come to the fore and stop the fiddling. However, if you try and stop the fiddling at the moment, you just mess it all up again. I have sometimes suggested to people just a tiniest of nudges. You know, they don't say non-self, what does that mean? No, body's non-self, that's just too much. Just non-self, stop. Maybe that nudge might be just enough to actually to stop you. Sometimes it doesn't, it's just too disturbing, even just thinking that. So the deeper you go in meditation, the more sensitive you are to any type of disturbance. So this is sometimes, I gave a similar a long time ago. As a kid, we used to make this house of cards, and the old playing cards. And they put two against the other, one on top, another two. And the higher you got, the more unstable it was. So you had to be just so careful when you put the ones on at the top. Because the tiniest of agitations and the whole thing would fall down. That's not quite what it's like with deep meditations, but it has some similarities. A tiny bit too much agitation, the whole thing just falls apart. And you can't get it back in. You've got to go back to square one, start all over again. But the best thing is telling yourself, programming the mind before you get to that stage. So it becomes automatic. You don't tell yourself to stop fiddling. The instructions are already there. Seeing the fiddling, turns it off straight away. Loving kindness, but by that point you've either got loving kindness or you haven't got loving kindness. If you try and say I should be loving kindness, then you're not actually being kind, you're hating the fact you weren't kind enough. That's right, and because it's so subtle, it's basically that just the training you've got so far. That's why another simile is, I say these great golfers or these great tennis players, you know, that all the training is done outside of the match. And so basically, by the time they go on the court, they've already won or lost, depending upon how much training they've done. Because it's automatic when you're on the court, you haven't got time to think, you know, when you're having to sort of return that serve. It's almost all automatic. And this is the same with the deep meditations. But the great tennis players, it's all those hours they take just banging the thing again and again and again until it gets an automatic process. That's why you're listening to talks like this. Because I am brainwashing, training, coaching the process. So the next time that happens, You do let go. You wonder why? It's because Ajahn Brahm told you. You notice where it came from. Because I noticed that when I used to get these deep meditations. What did I do? Where did that one come from? And I looked back and it was Ajahn Chah told me. He brainwashed me. You know, or what I read in the suttas, what the Buddha brainwashed me. You see just where all these cues come from. And they work and they're very powerful. And sometimes, now that's what I said the other day about you don't need to shake the mango tree, just hold out your hand, it falls by itself. That's a great sort of brainwashing by Ajahn Chah. What did it mean? I didn't understand what it meant, shaking the tree. But you know what it means when you've got a nimitta, you don't shake the nimitta. Hold your hand out, it'll happen by itself. Be completely passive. And those sorts of ideas still follow the positivity of Ajahn Chah. Those sorts of ideas were brainwashed into me. So it becomes almost an automatic response when I get to that stage of the meditation. You just do it. Why did I do that, or rather, why did I let go? Where did that cue come from? It was my teachers. There is a transmission in Theravada Buddhism, and this is it. It's nothing sort of esoteric. It's really out there in the open. You understand how it works. And don't worry that some of you think, oh, talking about nimittas, I can't even watch the breath for 2 minutes. And they go, all these other meditators, they're so advanced, I'm a waste of time, should I go home this afternoon? I don't think like that, because I've known many of you over many years, and many of you, when you first came, you were just really hopeless. And little by little, things start to happen, and you make progress, and little by little, you become these star meditators. So get this ego out of the way, I can, I can't, or how far you are along in the path and how far behind you are. Forget about all of that. Just allow it to happen, and it happens quite quickly when you stop judging yourself. Okay, so I think that's enough for this morning. We now have interviews. And those of you on the retreat before, we used to have the interviews in what's called the lounge over there, but that really, now just a few people having an interview takes up that whole lounge, and it's quite close to here, and sometimes I'm sure people meditating here can hear the interviews. So I've moved the interview room to what used to be the old telephone room, which is next to the gents' toilets. You can see it now. I put a little sign up there, the interview room, a little cartoon on there, which I apologise for. But you can have a look at that later on. That's the interview room. So it's actually between, you go to the dining room, the ladies, the men's, and the next little door there is the interview room. It's only a small room, but it's small enough there, big enough rather, to have the interview. And some of you have already put across, so you don't want an interview this morning. If they haven't had an interview, if you're after someone who's had an interview, don't just wait for your time, just move the time along a bit. So for example, Margot's supposed to be first, and Agnes, I saw she crossed her name off, so Eileen now moves up to the 9:20 slot. So just move up so that we don't have too much time in between, which is waiting. So those are the interviews for this morning. Margot, Renuka, would have been Agnes, Eileen, Wiling, Pauline, Phyllis, Gemma, Pauline Shield, Gemma, Canty, Lisa, Christina. I know that some of you have already crossed your name off, but I just remember Agnes has crossed hers off. So please come to the interviews. Those not having interviews, they'd like to just carry on meditating, having a rest, see what happens. Try the Anapanasati. But remember, the next stage is always within the one you're in now. So you don't need to go anywhere. Just be deeper where you already are. Okay, so have a nice morning. Ha ha ha.